Before we begin today, I want to acknowledge the presence of our great old colleague, Senior Judge Andy Efron, who is sitting with us while we have a vacancy on the court. The nomination of Professor Maggs to fill the vacancy has been voted out of the Armed Services Committee and awaits floor action in the Senate. In the meantime, we're very happy to have Judge Efron with us today. The first case today is United States v. Jerkins. Are counsel for the appellant ready? Counsel for the government? Counsel for the appellant may argue.
Hey, please, the court. Good morning. My name is Robert Feldmeyer. I represent the appellant in this case, Major David Jerkins. 2 weeks prior to trial, based upon a specification which the government had previously withdrawn and dismissed, my client's commanding general issued to him a general officer memorandum of reprimand detailing allegations which the government had withdrawn in the withdrawn specification. The government withdrew the specification presumably because it knew that it could not prove the allegations contained in that specification, namely that my client had fathered with a junior enlisted soldier unlawfully a child, and that child caused the withdrawal of my client's junior enlisted soldier.
Well, is the gravamen of the letter of reprimand, and I'm using the Air Force term because I come from there, is the gravamen of the Gomor, the child, the baby, or the fraternization?
Your Honor, there's no reason to mention the child but for the use of that of the child as the gravamen. The junior enlisted soldier in question, my client's wife, gave birth to their daughter 11 months after they were married. Pursuant to Army Regulation 600-20, this was the sexual transaction which led to the birth of this child was lawful, pursuant to the regulation, as it was conducted inside of marriage. There's no need to
lawful in church and state.
What's that?
In church and state.
Your Honor.
Never mind.
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. The bottom line is that the allegations contained in this Gomar were highly prejudicial and with lawyerly misleading language gave the impression that my client had caused a junior enlisted soldier to be separated for pregnancy from the armed forces of the United States. I turned out that my client's wife was separated for pregnancy, but this is a pregnancy which occurred during marriage and as a result of marriage, and was therefore completely proper and had no business being included in a Gomar or in any document negatively characterizing my client's service in the Armed Forces of the United States. Despite the fact that the impression which this Gomar gave was highly prejudicial and frankly false, the military judge admitted it. The military judge admitted it in violation of Military Rule of Evidence 403. The military judge also erred when she admitted it in rebuttal, as the evidence was improper rebuttal evidence. Finally, members of the court, the highly inflammatory language contained in the Gomar, as well as the commanding general's opinion that he had serious doubts as to my client's suitability for continued service in the United States Armed Forces, this opinion raised the specter of unlawful command influence. I'll first address the MRE 403 issue. Members of the court, probative value and unfair prejudice are both MRE 403 factors. The Gomar here had low probative value and was unfairly prejudicial.
Now, counsel, the military judge did not engage in this balancing test in the course of the hearing, correct?
I mean, she said she was engaging in it, but didn't actually conduct the balancing test on the record, so we have no idea what factors she did and did not.
So it was just a blanket, I've considered 403 issues and it's good to go.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're not rebutting any of her analysis. You're simply saying there was no analysis and it was mistaken anyways.
Yes, Your Honor. We just don't know what the 403 analysis was. And so an analysis conducted now after the fact reveals that the probative value is extremely low and the prejudice extremely high. The Gomar itself was not evidence of anything. There's no evidence that General Phipps, the officer who issued the Gomar, had any direct knowledge of my client or even ever met my client. Rather, he was just cataloging accusations which were reported to him. In the same way that this court would not permit the government to introduce an indictment or an arrest warrant, accusation to which somebody has not yet had the chance to respond, here the Gomar was similarly unrespondent. My client had not yet exercised his right under AR 600-37 to respond and rebut the allegations contained in the Gomar. Gomar was just an accusation. It was a highly inflammatory accusation. And the whole reason why AR 600-37 gives somebody the ability to respond is exactly because of the circumstances that we have in this case. Incorrect and misleading allegations contained in an accusation.
Counsel, should we be suspicious of the timing here?
Extremely suspicious, Your Honor. The fact that the Gomar covers the exact same alleged misconduct, which the government evidently decided it could not prove and therefore withdrew and dismissed, is extremely problematic.
But it's not just that. The government became aware the offense alleged underlying issue was 2011. The government became aware of it 2013, withdrew the charges end of 2013, and the Gomar didn't come out until 2 weeks before the trial. Should we put particular emphasis on that?
Well, part of the problem, I think, for the government's case, Your Honor, is that, as is detailed in the joint appendix, that defense counsel made the government aware of the fact that, hey, my client was married 11 months before his child was born. This child was born in marriage and conceived in marriage, and that the conception of this child was lawful. You can't, based upon my client's service record, ipso facto conclude that he fraternized because he has significant time in the North Carolina National Guard. AR 600-20 has different rules with regard to fraternization.
Whoa. He was on what status was he when he was allegedly fraternizing?
That's not detailed in the record, Your Honor.
Was he on active duty?
Was he
on 32 duty? Was he on state duty?
Your Honor,
we don't know.
We don't know the circumstances under which my client met his wife and what.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. Go ahead. I'm asking. During the time that this alleged fraternization took place, leave the baby out of it, what was his status?
Your Honor, there's...
The mere fact he's a member of the National Guard doesn't get him out of the code, but if he's in 32 status, or if he's in state status, that may blow the whole thing up. What was his status?
Your Honor, The Gomar doesn't detail when the alleged fraternization was.
Well, no, I'm not asking what Gomar says. I'm asking you. You don't know?
I don't, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I don't.
Counsel, who asked that the rules of evidence be relaxed for sentencing? It was your client, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor. However, in the United States, yes.
And did your client have an opportunity to rebut any of this evidence after it was put in a rebuttal to his good military character defense?
I mean,
all the arguments that you're making now here now could have been made then, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but this court in the United States v. Esslinger indicated that although the rules of evidence with regard to hearsay and authentication may be relaxed, MRA 701 and 602 still require that somebody expressing an opinion as to suitability for continued service have a basis for that opinion. Here there's no evidence that General Phipps ever even met my client. There's no foundation that General Phipps had direct knowledge of my client's character for service.
Prejudice, given the photos that were introduced and the other evidence, why would we believe or why do you argue that there's any impact on the sentence in this case?
Your Honor, a single incident of over-discipline, the photos that were introduced show bruising, and that was, of course, serious, and my client was properly punished for it. However, to state that with certainty that my client, who was going on 19 years of service, a year and change away from retirement, and had an otherwise outstanding military career, OERs except for one that were outstanding, and the one OER that wasn't outstanding was accompanied in the record by evidence that indicated that the Third Corps commanding general.
Why doesn't that cut the other way, that this de minimis letter about fraternization with someone who became his wife would have little impact in light of all that other things, and that the sentence was based on other factors?
Well, Your Honor, a couple things. Number one, the highly inflammatory language, it doesn't make it look like that this was the Gomar makes it look like he impregnated a junior enlisted soldier who had to leave the service because she was pregnant. And that's simply not what those simply aren't the facts in the case.
So why wasn't that evidence put on at all?
I mean, it was, Your Honor.
You had an opportunity to put on surrebuttal, right?
We did have the opportunity to put on a surrebuttal. However, the official imprimatur that's given as a result of the Gomar is something very hard. The fact that a commanding general thinks he should not continue to serve is something very hard to escape. And the opinions expressed in that Gomar, which were not rebutted directly by the evidence concerning the child, the opinions expressed in that Gomar were improper because they were not proper rebuttal. There's no evidence and no foundation that General Phipps had personal knowledge of my client.
Well, he doesn't have to have personal knowledge of your client. I mean, sitting there is this OER, which in the Air Force we'd call a referral OER because it's so bad, that says this guy is unfit for further service, his duty performance stinks, and don't promote him. And I would say that if here's the scale, here's the OER, and here's the Gomar, blink. That doesn't go to criminal liability, of course, but it does go to duty performance, which is, I think, what the subject of the Gomar was.
Well, a couple things, Your Honor. The opinion which General Phipps expressed was not evidently based on the OER. The opinion was based upon the allegations.
That's the point I'm making. They're two separate things.
Well, they are two separate things, but the OER was rebutted by the opinion of the Third Corps commanding general, a three-star officer.
Irrespective of when the child was conceived or born, the fraternization issue isn't wiped away by that, right? I mean, he was fraternizing with her, wasn't he?
I don't know, Your Honor. Again, because of the unique circumstances of his history, I mean, the government elicited no evidence to actually show fraternization. The marriage itself doesn't ipso facto prove that he was fraternizing.
He met one day and got married.
Again, Your Honor, because of my client's, I'm unmarried. I know my mother wishes I'd do that, but I mean, the fact that the mere existence of the marriage doesn't necessarily prove pursuant to AR 600-20 that there was fraternization simply because my client had significant guard time. And there's no showing when he met his wife, when the relationship started. Was it a pre-existing relationship? Did it predate her entry into the military service? None of that is shown.
Counsel, is your argument with respect to rebuttal one that you had information which would have been used to rebut at trial, or is your argument on rebuttal that the Gomar is not valid for use in a court-martial until the opportunity for rebuttal has been given and that opportunity has either been exercised or declined?
I mean, Your Honor, a little of both. Number one, that the 403 that the 403 scales tip against admission when my client hasn't yet had the chance to rebut the allegations, simply because they're at that point allegations in the same category as an indictment or an arrest warrant, something to which he hasn't yet had the opportunity to reply. And which
well, I think the question from one of the other judges was the opportunity at trial a sufficient opportunity to rebut the letter? Or is your argument that the letter never should have come in at trial so that the opportunity to rebut at trial is irrelevant?
Both, Your Honor. The letter never should have come in because, number one, it's improper rebuttal. Had the government tried to admit it in its case in chief, it would not have been permitted to do so under RCM 1001B2 because it was an incomplete record at that point. AR 600-37 details the process by which Gomar may be completed, and the ability to respond and rebut is part of that process. So the record at that point was
incomplete. He had the opportunity, and his defense counsel asked for an extension of time, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and the process had not been complete. The record at the time.
But he was aware that this letter was out there. Right?
He was aware that the letter was out there, but if this court the regulation A gives him the opportunity to request an extension of time, that's completely proper, and B, were this court to say that he must respond prior to trial, that would impact.
Could the general have denied the opportunity to rebut and say, we're going to court-martial and I want this letter to be finished beforehand?
No, Your Honor. He has in the regulation, if I'm not mistaken, the right to ask for a 20-day.
He has the right to ask, but could the general have denied it?
I believe he is he could have. If I'm not mistaken, the regulation contains the right to ask for an extension for cause shown, and this is a good cause.
Okay, so what happened? Here's this Gomar sitting out here. He has a regulatory right to respond, basically respond to the hearing. Okay, he gets defense counsel gets an extension so he may do so. Did the whole thing just fall into the ether? I mean, he's afforded the chance to rebut it, and then there isn't any rebuttal. Did he waive it? What's going on here?
Well, he didn't waive it because it was still pending. The period of time hadn't yet expired.
Counsel,
but what happened? He didn't respond. He didn't rebut, even though he was afforded the time to do it. So why not, or how not, or what?
Counsel, I think what maybe is confusing, my understanding is that with regard to Judge Stuckey's position, the time, as of trial, the time had not expired, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And does the appellate record tell us, not asking for your testimony here, does the appellate record tell us whether a rebuttal was filed and whether the letter itself was filed in the record? I'm not asking for external information. I'm asking for the appellate record before us.
The appellate record does not tell us that information, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Judge Olson, this question.
Counsel, in your brief, you argue that harmless beyond a reasonable doubt is the proper standard.
Yes, Your Honor.
You point to UCI. What's your basis for that?
Well, and I see my time's expired, so I'll be as brief.
Please answer the question.
Yes, Your Honor. The opinion of the commanding general directly supervised my client was communicated to the panel room regarding retainability. This court has indicated in both Pope and Grady that, quote, the appearance of improperly influencing the court-martial proceedings is troubling because it conveys the command's view that harsh action should be taken against an accused.
But why isn't that UCI in the air, the expression this court has used before, rather than something more concrete in terms of a UCI problem?
Well, Your Honor, once the specter of UCI has been raised, the government has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt, A, that there was no actual influence on the proceedings, and B, that public perception would not be affected if this sentence were allowed to stand. The fact that one of the panel members, Lieutenant Colonel Jimenez, was directly supervised as a Division West staff officer by the general issuing the Gomar, and that general has communicated his opinion to the panel room about retainability should pose serious concerns both with regard to actual unlawful command influence and with regard to the appearance of unlawful command influence. The government has...
Is that issue raised?
Yes, Your Honor. The issue of unlawful command influence was not directly raised, however...
So the government wants to put in this letter, what happens? The government moves to put in the letter.
And there is an objection as to 403 and as to improper rebuttal.
If I may follow up on the standard. Assuming that the standard is harmless and not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and I'm not asking you to concede that, but assume it's harmless, the government argues that in light of the severity of the offense, and the OER, any error was harmless. What would be your response to that?
My response to that is that the OER was successfully rebutted and that the severity of the offense, while serious, was not a case where the appellant's stepchild was seriously injured. He was bruised, but there were no broken bones. There was no permanent injury. And that to say that a panel would dismiss an officer on the verge of retirement when he has had an otherwise stellar career, when the one indication of a non-stellar career had been successfully rebutted by the opinion of the Third Corps commander, is a stretch, more than a stretch. Pending the questions of the court.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Suki, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Allison Rowley, along with Major Michael Cordy. I represent the United States in this case. The military judge did not...
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor. My voice is...
I understand.
I will do my best, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The military judge did not abuse her discretion by admitting the GOMAR because it was relevant rebuttal evidence and satisfied the requirements under MRE 403. And even if the judge did err, the error did not substantially influence the sentence. To the first point.
Counsel, before we get into the merits or demerits of the thing, didn't he have a due process right guaranteed by law to rebut this thing?
Your Honor, AR 600-37 provides that appellant must have had the opportunity to submit rebuttal matters, and he was granted the opportunity to submit rebuttal matters.
Are you saying he waived it?
No, Your Honor. He requested...
What are you saying?
The government's position is that he was granted the opportunity to respond, requested an extension, and he was granted that extension. And so while he may have not, at the time of the court-martial, actually submitted his rebuttal...
Well, isn't that kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room? The government wants to put this thing in. It is procedurally deficient because he hasn't been afforded due process. So where does that leave us?
Your Honor, it was not procedurally deficient because he had not yet responded.
It's procedurally incomplete.
Yes, Your Honor. However, even still, appellant had the opportunity at trial through surrebuttal to submit any evidence that counteracted any inaccuracy within the GOMAR.
So if we were to adopt the government's position, what would prevent in future courts, Marshal, from SJAs and general court martial convening authorities perceiving it as a green light from this court to impose a GOMAR 24 hours before a court martial and say, well, you had 24 hours to respond, or you can address this in the course of the sentencing?
Your Honor, to that point, the timing may be a concern, and of course this court should be weary of a blanket rule or what this message may send. However, in this instance, it was wholly within the...
So how would you have this court draw that distinction? We can't say in an opinion and provide any guidance, well, you need to be leery about this when the military judge on the record didn't engage in any balancing test. So what is the standard you are asking us to come up with here?
Your Honor, it would be an analysis under MRE 403 in terms of whether this whether the GOMAR itself was unfairly prejudiced.
Okay, but here there was no 403 analysis by the military judge.
Well, the judge did indicate, Your Honor, on the record that she was conducting an MRE 403 analysis.
But she simply invoked those words.
Yes, Your Honor. And so we do not know exactly what her balancing...
And it's entitled to very little deference.
Yes, Your Honor, but it is still entitled to some deference. However, even still, the appellant was not unfairly prejudiced because the probative value of the GOMAR was so high. Appellant built his sentencing case on the good military character evidence that he presented.
So, but you're saying that in the opinion you would ask this court to write, that we should cite the timing of the GOMAR? Why wouldn't we simply cite the timings that are in the regs in terms of providing the individual with the appropriate amount of time to file a response?
Your Honor, the timing of the GOMAR isn't a reason why the GOMAR was admitted. The GOMAR was admitted because it directly rebutted appellant's sentencing case.
Well, the appellant's sentencing case, correct me if I'm mistaken, addressed his performance from 2005 to 2008. This was a GOMAR relative to his performance in 2011.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, when appellant paints himself as a good soldier, one with good military character, certainly it is within fairness for the government to paint a full picture for the panel of what...
So the government wants the ability to paint a full picture but is going to deny and accuse the right to paint a full picture by responding to the GOMAR?
The appellant had the right to through SIR rebuttal to question any inaccuracies in the Gomar. And the military judge did admit the request for an extension to respond to the Gomar.
So what you want to do is transfer the responsibility for the administration of the Gomar from the Army regulation to the court-martial. How would we know at the court-martial what, if any, determination the members made as to the validity? The court-martial is not required to give reasons for its sentence. The members don't give reason for a sentence. There's nothing that could happen at the court-martial that would change those words.
With regard to whether there was substantial influence on the sentence through the admittance of the
government? I can't hear you, counsel.
Whether the words of the general officer who issued the letter and the letter itself were accurate. There's nothing that would happen at the court-martial that would change those words. Those words would remain in the letter after the court-martial, no matter what the court-martial did, because you wouldn't know from the court-martial sentence whether the members agreed or disagreed with any rebuttal. The only way of knowing whether there was agreement or disagreement with appellant's rebuttal would be when the general officer, as the general officer, determined whether to retain that letter. Yeah, my question is, what does the rebuttal at trial have to do with the opportunity to rebut the letter? The letter would remain in effect until the general did something about it. There's nothing that could happen at trial that would change that letter. Absent a ruling by the judge that the letter was not admissible, it would have gone in at trial, and we would never know what the members did, regardless of what they did at sentence, whether they issued a dismissal or not dismissal, 12 months, 24 months, 3 months on a sentence. That would have no impact on the letter, would it?
Well, Your Honor, with regard to any impact this would have had on their deliberations, it's clear from the other evidence presented that the Gomar was perhaps maybe the least of the fact that there were no...
I understand that. That's your harmlessness argument. Let's go back to the Gomar itself.
Could the appellant have brought in evidence that he did not fraternize?
Yes, Your Honor.
Could he have brought in evidence that the woman had the baby after they were married?
Yes, Your Honor. And that goes to the government's point that appellant had the opportunity through potential SIR rebuttal to present any evidence that challenged the Gomar, but he did not.
And it would be up to the members to weigh that at that point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, getting back to the letter itself, it appears that the position that you're taking today, that there was an opportunity to rebut the letter, and that is inconsistent with the position that you've taken in your brief and that the judge took at trial. In your trial, on page 4 of your brief, you say, she, the judge, found that the Gomar was fully issued. The judge says fully issued. And that the only meaning of the rebuttal was to determine whether it should be filed or not. And that's a position you also take in your brief. So is it the position of the government that there is no due process right to challenge the substance of a letter of reprimand, that a general officer can give a letter of reprimand and that letter is fully issued, and that the only purpose of rebuttal is to decide its filing, not to challenge the substance of it?
No, Your Honor. The Gomar was fully issued. It existed at the time of the court-martial. The thing that was not yet in existence was a filing determination. Now, appellant had not yet submitted his rebuttal matter.
Well, that's like saying a court-martial has an existence, but it hasn't yet issued findings and sentence. Well, of course not. It's not done, and neither is this letter.
Yes, Your Honor. However, what the judge did also admit was the request for an extension to submit rebuttal matters, which indicated what the exact issue with the letter was, and that was a language concern.
Well, wait a minute. Now you're saying that the request for an extension constituted the rebuttal under 637? 637 is an administrative reg governing the administrative, governing administrative matters. It doesn't apply to courts martial, but it affords a separate source of due process. And this half-done thing pops up in a court martial, and we've got to decide what to do with it.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but most importantly, the rules of evidence were relaxed at this point. They were relaxed during the defense sentencing case in chief. And so that matters with regard to the of the letter. Defense opened the door.
Well, I don't think defense was arguing that the letter wasn't authentic or that it wasn't the best evidence of whatever was in the general's mind at the moment he dictated it. That's not the point. The point is he's got a due process right to rebuttal, which he didn't get.
I think, counsel, that the problem is not whether the letter could have come in along with whatever he filed. The problem is that as it stands, it came in without the rebuttal. Okay? And so, well, I don't disagree that the rebuttal could have been done at trial. Procedurally, it's incomplete. So why don't you make your argument about prejudice, please?
Yes, Your Honor. The probative value of the Gomar was so high because of what defense they called five witnesses that testified to appellant's good military character.
Now, are you addressing Judge Ryan's point about harmlessness, or are you sticking with the probative value?
Because, yeah, I mean, that's not the argument I would think you would be making about harmless. Well, first of all, what is the standard of review? Second, why do you win based on whatever the standard of review is?
Your Honor, even if the military judge did err, the question is whether the error substantially influenced the sentence. And in this case, the error did not, if the judge did err. And that is because of the severity of appellant's crimes. He assaulted...
Appellant's what?
Because of the severity of appellant's crimes, he assaulted his 3-year-old stepson with a belt, inflicting multiple bruises and lacerations. And the panel was able to see the pictures in supplemental JA pages 157 through 165, which demonstrated the extent of the injuries that he inflicted. Not only that, but appellant, during his unsworn statement, did not express any remorse or regret for what he had done. He had lied about what he had done. During his sentencing case, his counselor testified that appellant had told him that the injuries were the result of an accidental fall or a dog bite. And so there is this unwillingness to acknowledge what he has done. Moreover, there is...
Well, at what point in the record did he lie in his statement?
Your Honor, the lie came in through the testimony of Lieutenant Colonel Simpson, who was appellant's counselor, through family advocacy. And he testified that appellant had told him that the injuries were the result of an accidental...
Okay, I understood you to say that he, the appellant, lied during his sentencing case.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
In fact, during his unsworn, he didn't directly discuss what happened. The most that he said that he would never use a belt for corporal punishment.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
What if any use of the letter at issue was made during the sentencing argument?
Your Honor, the letter was not mentioned by either counsel at all during the sentencing argument. What was referred to was the referred OER that appellant received for the time between 2009 and 2011 where he was where he had made false statements and failed to live up to the Army values. That was referred to during the sentencing argument. And so through all of those factors, the admittance of the Gomar did not substantially influence the sentence.
Well, I think this is what Judge Ryan was talking about a little bit ago. You started off by talking about the stupendous probative value of this Gomar, and then you turn it around and say, well, it didn't really matter much because nobody talked about it. This guy's a field grade officer. Anything like that is going to have an enormous probative effect on the career, on the reputation of a field grade officer. You're not talking about an E2 here. And the government seems to be saying that, yeah, it could have had a lot of effect, but somehow it didn't. What is the government's position here?
The government's position, Your Honor, is that it's two separate analyses. So with regard to whether the Gomar should have admitted, it should have been admitted because its probative value was so high, and so it's satisfied the requirements under MRE 403 with regard to any danger of unfair prejudice.
That okay, leaving aside the problem we have with 403.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying that its probative value as to rehabilitative potential was relevant, high, whatever.
Yes, Your Honor, with regard to retention evidence and good military character.
Right, but its effect on sentencing somehow wasn't.
Your Honor, well, the question for sentencing is whether there was a substantial influence. And in light of the fact that the Gomar was not referenced at all during sentencing argument, and all the other the evidence that was presented with the referred OER and the nature and extent of appellant's crimes demonstrates that this had...
You're saying that the nature and extent. There's one incident, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there other things that aren't on the charge sheet?
No, Your Honor. It was the assault consummated by a battery, but the panel was able to see the pictures on supplemental JA 157 through 165, which demonstrated the extent. And this, combined with his lack of remorse, shows that this Gomar did not succeed.
On the other side of the equation, what evidence did appellant put on in terms of good military character and other evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. So the appellant called five witnesses to testify to good military character. There were other witnesses as well who testified to other things. Some of them were only rehab potential. The five specifically testified mostly to both duty performance, good military character, and rehabilitative potential. Colonel Peters is specifically a good example of this. He testified that he would gladly serve with appellant again, and that he had strong to excellent duty performance and was very reliable. But there were several other witnesses, including two general officers and other field grade officers who testified to this. And so,
well, that's a pretty impressive panoply. But what I understand you're saying is that despite the fact that we tossed this Gomar in there to kind of tip the balance, it was really the horrible nature of what he did. Is that what the government's saying?
With regard to the impact on sentencing, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
So what do you make of defense argument that harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard should be applied in this case?
Your Honor, there is the standard of review for error would be whether and simple harmlessness, not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
What do you make of the defense argument that there was UCI here?
Your Honor, there was no UCI in this case. While the timing may look suspicious, there are several factors that this court should consider. First of all, Major General Phipps, the general officer who issued the Gomar, was not the GCMCA who referred the case. He also did not select the panel. He made no recommendation through the transmittal as to the disposition of the charges. He did not come and testify in person. This was the only opinion that was presented. And there was no other evidence that Major General Phipps, through issuing the Gomar, intended to use this as a way to influence the court-martial. We could tell that because this Gomar was not admitted during interrogation. This Gomar was only admitted during rebuttal when defense had opened the door through parading several field grade officers and major and general officers testifying to appellant's good military character. And it was only in fairness, and this court said in United States versus Hallam, that the purpose of rebuttal is to explain, counteract, and disprove evidence shown by the other party. And this Gomar did that. This Gomar shows and paints a full picture to the panel that appellant did not have good military character.
And counsel, didn't this officer have three combat tours in Iraq as well?
Your Honor, I cannot recall from the record, but I know that he did deploy several times.
Counsel, just going back briefly to the letter of reprimand, The Army regulation requires commanders to carefully consider all the facts and circumstances in reaching an appropriate disposition. What evidence of fraternization is set forth on the text of the letter of reprimand?
Your Honor, I see that I am nearly...
You may answer the question.
Your Honor, so the evidence of fraternization, well, the language concerning Mrs. Jerkins' pregnancy was not necessary. The language that did indicate fraternization was the date suggesting the date that they obtained their marriage license, the date of the marriage, and also the date of Mrs. Jerkins' separation. We can glean from that that at the time that they obtained their marriage license and got married, that she was a soldier at that time, an enlisted.
But what do you glean from the record as to any fraternization that took place before the marriage?
Your Honor, it would the strongest evidence that we had from the record would be the time period between the date that they obtained the marriage license and the date of the marriage, which was several weeks. It would be a hard-pressed argument to say that people get married in a vacuum, and Ms. Jerkins did testify during the merits that she met appellant while he was a major. It's unclear how long they knew each other, but there is that evidence there that suggested that there was this improper relationship, certainly before they got married, Your Honor.
And is that set forth in the letter itself? Where does the general say that this activity took place before your marriage, and it constituted a prohibited relationship here?
The very first sentence says that he's being reprimanded for fraternization.
I understand that.
Your Honor, the last sentence in the first paragraph states that appellant was being reprimanded for fraternization that occurred prior to the marriage, and so it is clear from that the fraternization being punished for was prior to the marriage.
Thank you.
This court should affirm the sentence in this case.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Can I ask you a quick question before you do that? What was the sentence that the government asked for at trial? And what did defense counsel ask for? That's okay.
Just don't recall off the top of my head.
And counsel, before you get through your presentation, I asked the government counsel what the record reflected as far as his deployment, past deployments were. And I thought the record here indicated that your client had 3 combat tours in Iraq. Is that not? Am I mistaken?
I believe you'd be correct, Your Honor.
He was an artillery officer?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Counsel, to follow up on the prior questions, what was the issue at sentencing in terms of the quantum of the sentence? Was it time of confinement? Was it dismissal? What were the different points that the parties were making?
I mean, the defense certainly disputed that as to whether or not a punitive discharge, whether or not dismissal was appropriate. The defense conceded that punishment was appropriate, but that dismissal was for the over-discipline of his stepson, in which no bones were broken. To be clear, serious bruising, serious lapse of judgment, serious lapse of self-control. But in terms of the spectrum of child abuse, this one incident of overuse of a belt did not merit the very severe sentence that the panel imposed. Members of the court, very briefly to move back to the standard of review, the defense position is that under either standard of review, the appellant's position is that under either standard of review, this court should set aside and dismiss the sentence and order a hearing on it.
So in terms of harmlessness, if you were to look at the Gomar writ large, it was the general saying, I'm not sure you should stay in military service anymore. But if you look at the OER that was introduced, that one was pretty clear, this accused should not stay in service anymore. So why doesn't the weight of the OER swamp the weight of this Gomar?
Well, because the OER itself an officer superior to the officials issuing that OER opined that it was improper and should be removed from his OMPF. The panel learned that of the very unusual circumstance in which a three-star general opines this OER, not good, should be removed from the OMPF. The rest of my client's OERs were stellar and indicated a phenomenal performance of duty.
Could you address, will you finish the question? Then the date of the issuance of the OER and any subsequent action that was taken with respect to that OER during the balance of his service?
Your Honor, in the supplemental appendix, there are documents detailing the fact that my client moved to have his OER administratively removed from his OMPF. He wasn't granted that relief. However, in the process of investigating the circumstances under which he received that OER, not only did the Third Corps Commanding General recommend removal of that document, an investigating officer who investigated the circumstances surrounding the issuance of that OER recommended Article 15s for the Raider and Intermediate Raider, I believe.
I understand that, but in terms of your client,
yes, sir.
Does the record show us what, if any, action was taken by the government to remove him from military service after the issuance of that OER?
I know, Your Honor. There's no indication that any sort of administrative action to remove my client occurred.
And how much time passed between the issuance of that OER and the court-martial?
It was several years, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember off the top of my head the precise date the improper OER.
But it seems, counsel, that
in 2011, Your Honor.
Counsel, you seem to be saying that the GOMAR shouldn't come in because administrative procedures weren't followed, and yet with the OER, it shouldn't be considered, even though all the administrative procedures were followed.
No, Your Honor, I respectfully submit that's not my position at all. My position is that although the OER was properly considered, there was significant evidence rebutting the assertions contained in that OER. The entire OMPF was admitted properly to evidence. The OMPF contained the information which I just discussed, that a three-star general believed that this OER should be removed from the file, and that...
Did the three-star have the authority to remove it?
He didn't have the authority himself.
Okay, you've got to go to the correction board.
The correction board has that authority.
Yeah, I know. I've been on one.
Yes, sir.
But there's no evidence that it was ever done.
There's no evidence that it was removed.
Nobody followed up on it.
The board did direct certain redactions from the OER, but not the total removal of the
OER. The correction board?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the correction board did not follow the recommendation.
That's correct.
The correction board simply redacted it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
In any event, it's not our contention that the OER was improperly admitted, rather that it was successfully rebutted and neutralized by this additional information. Number one, that a three-star general disagreed with it and recommended its removal, and number two, that a 15-6 investigating officer recommended Article 15 discipline for the officers responsible in connection.
Well, the fact that he was still on active duty when he was court-martialed must show that somebody decided not to throw him out administratively.
Yes, Your Honor, that as well. I see that my time has expired, pending any further questions from the members of the court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court will recess until 10:30.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:30.